atheist or whatever. And I think it was a great opportunity for us to see him. So,
will you remember this day?
Yeah, I definitely will.
Kids at the Key Arena yesterday, it was packed with children ages 3 and 4 up through high school. But this in the Seattle Times on Monday, when the Dalai Lama awarded an honorary degree at the UW, University of Washington, students will get to ask him his views on compassion, peace and relationships, but not on the Chinese political situation or Tibet. UW officials last month asked students to submit possible questions for the Dalai Lama's campus visit. About 60 students responded, including 8 who wanted to ask about China or Tibet. But when UW officials handpicked 14 students to ask questions at the event, politics were deliberately left out. And that does it for today's program. Democracy Now! Is produced by Shrufa Bokadus and Anjali Kamat, Aaron Mate. Special thanks here in Portland to Andres Contreras and Dennis Moynihan and Hani Massoud. Want to thank all the team here that made this broadcast possible. Also, tonight we'll be in San Francisco and Oakland, tomorrow in Sebastopol. Then we head to Houston and Denver and Albuquerque. Check our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. Time for Off the Hook. Time for Off the Wall. Yeah. Time for the CD machine to work. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is off the wall. It really is. I'm sorry for mixing things up. In fact, I should point out there is no Off the Hook this week. We forgot to mention that last week on the other radio show, so I know it's going to happen. A lot of people are going to tune in and hear something else and panic and get upset. And there's really nothing we can do about it because it's on a different radio station, so maybe word can be spread through this method. And on this radio station, our fundraiser is over. I want to thank everybody for pitching in and helping out and making it a success. Makes all the difference in the world. It's been interesting. I've been sort of, I guess, intentionally cut off from the world last few days. Just kind of, I don't know, not paying attention to what's going on outside. And there's something to be said for that. There's something good about just sort of not even paying a bit of attention to what's happened. I we could be under martial law for all I know. We could be living in a completely different style of government. Something could have happened. Yeah. I'm trying to imagine all the crazy things that could be happening, and things look normal enough out there in the street. I don't see any signs of panic. So I assume it's more of the same garbage just happening, and I'm not really missing anything by not paying any attention. And sometimes you just need to sort of get away from all of the headlines and all the nonsense that takes place in the media. And I imagine if something really urgent had happened, I probably would have heard about it. Somebody would have called me, and I might have even picked up the phone and found out what it was. But one thing I do know, one thing I do remember, is that a year ago today, where I was a year ago today, well, I'll give you a hint. Whoops. Okay, I think that's enough of a hint. Well, yeah, obviously this is music from North Korea, and that's where I was 1 year ago today, April 15th, 2007. And I'll tell you, nobody's thinking about their taxes over there, at least not at this time of year. Today is actually the most important day of the year in North Korea. It's the birthday of the great leader, Kim Il-sung. And love him or hate him, the fact of the matter is you won't hear anything about that over here. Not that I've been looking at the newspapers, but I just bet that there isn't a single story about it anywhere. I mean, well, you may say that it's completely alien to us, and that's something that we view with hostility and suspicion. But like it or not, it's reality. And that's one of the reasons I went over there, to see another version of reality, to see another culture, a completely alien country. And wow, it was pretty alien. And the memories of that just, they stay with you forever. They really do. Just the incredible space of the square in the middle of Pyongyang, and the people in the farm fields and the empty roads, and just the sense that you're in a place that's like no other on the planet. Wow. I do recommend it. I do recommend going to a bizarre country like North Korea, if you can even get in. But I don't recommend it to everybody. In fact, probably not to most people I know. Because most people I know just aren't very tolerant of things that are too different. And I think that's sad. I think that's sad that you can't sort of suspend your level of comfort and the things that you're used to, and just see how other people live. Not that you really see how actual North Koreans live when you go there as a tourist, but you do get a window. You do get a glimpse. You can take whatever you want out of the situation and learn something. And I think that's always a good thing. And who knows how much longer that place will be in its present condition. Can't last forever. Eventually there's going to be some kind of unity between the two Koreas, and this culture will just be part of history. And a bizarre history at that. But it's always interesting, weird, kind of uplifting to go to a place that you're taught to be so afraid of and to actually interact with people and become friendly with them and share stories, wave at complete strangers, and just sort of witness their daily lives and realize that the people aren't really the enemy. We're just victims of completely different belief systems and cultures and histories and accidents and things like that. So much we can learn from each other if we just give it the chance. And that's something we never seem to want to do. So much music, too, I got out of that place. My God. Just, I must have about 20 hours of North Korean music just in various forms, either taped off the radio or gotten off of CDs or VCDs or even DVDs. There's all kinds of things floating around the internet, too. They love music. They love opera. They love performances. It's a pretty unbelievable place just to witness that, if nothing else. I'll bet, we could just get the North Koreans to run the Rose Bowl parade, the whole halftime show and everything. Maybe even the Super Bowl halftime show. And people would see how amazingly talented and skilled they are. And maybe everyone would just sort of forget about all the military nonsense. and we could just have some performing arts. That would be kind of nice, wouldn't it? Well, why not? I mean, the New York Philharmonic went over there, and they were completely in awe of the place, and they were the place was in awe of them. And now they want to have Eric Clapton come over. Eric Clapton come to North Korea. I mean, wow. I don't know if he realizes this. I'm not sure if he realizes that this is not just another gig. This is a chance to literally change history. I mean, it's one thing to have opera in a theater. It's one thing to have the New York Philharmonic come and play classical music. But to have somebody go over there and for the first time in a country's history play rock and roll music, and I presume to the young people, not just the older statesmen. Well, think about that. These are people who don't even get to hear it on the radio. People who aren't allowed to listen to foreign newscasts or radio broadcasts or television transmissions or anything. To have that opportunity to go there and to play your music to a crowd like this. The mere fact that it's being considered is staggering, and I sure hope he takes advantage of it and goes over there and helps spread goodwill in the form of rock music. Wow, I never thought that would happen. But it can. It can. Ambassadors come from the strangest places sometimes. So what else has been going on? You know, we might take phone calls later on if people are out there. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB, as long as you promise not to tell me what's going on in the world. I don't want to know. No, it's okay. You can tell me. I'm sure there's nothing that I haven't seen before. So I'm getting all this mail now from people that say, hey, Emmanuel, I just saw a smart car in my neighborhood, and as you may know, I've had a smart car since 2005. Those little tiny cars that are big in Europe, and well, they're not big in Europe. They're the same size over there, but you know what I mean. They're popular in Europe, and we have more of an army march here. This will be the last one, all right? Yeah, it gets on your nerves after a while. So they're very popular over in Europe, and they're here now. There are smart car showrooms. There's one right out here on Long Island, in fact. And I haven't seen one myself yet. I've seen some in showrooms. I have not seen any on the street. But people are emailing me constantly saying, yes, I just saw one. So I've reached the point now where, okay, I can drive down the street in the thing, and it doesn't attract nearly as much attention as it did a couple of years ago. People still point and wave and smile and scream and fall down and do all kinds of other histrionics. But it's not nearly as pronounced. And I, for one, I'm happy about that, because sometimes you just want to be left alone. Sometimes you just don't want the hassle of having to constantly roll down your window and explain what this car is, how many miles per gallon it gets, what it costs, and et cetera, et cetera. It just gets ridiculous after a while. I'm tired of always smiling and waving. You know, I'm not a politician. I'm not somebody who has to be on public display and has to always maintain a pleasant face. I like to scowl. I like to frown. I like to be angry. Well, I do. I do like to be angry. Being angry is actually a good thing, all right? It gets a bad rap, but sometimes when things really get to you, when things really annoy you, it's good not to put a bright face on it. It's good to put an angry face on it and to express how you really feel. I found nothing's more liberating than that. And sometimes I'm in a damn bad mood when I'm driving my smart car. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry for all you smiling people on the street corners waving and jumping up and down. Sometimes I just can't be a good ambassador to this smart car movement. I'm sorry. So if I didn't answer all your questions to your satisfaction or return your waves in quite the manner you expected, well, that's just part of being human, I suppose. But now that there's more smart cars driving around, I'm sure there's more people you can chase after and bother and ask questions about the damn things. and hopefully I can just be left alone to get back and forth from wherever it is I'm going. And actually, you know, it's funny. I was driving the other night. I got pulled over for speeding. I got pulled over for speeding in the smart car. Now that's a Medal of Honor, isn't it? That ought to show these people. Yeah, these cars can they can go fast just like any other car. Yeah, I got pulled over for doing 70 miles an hour in a 55. And the cop left me off. He left me off with a warning. It was very nice. I fully expected to get a ticket. I deserved it. I was going. I thought I was going as fast as everybody else, though. I think maybe he might have just pulled me over to get a good look at the car. And I've heard from other people that does happen. And what sort of backed that up was, that's the last North Korean song, right? Okay, that's the last one. Now we can just sort of concentrate. What backs this up was after I was pulled over, a couple other cop cars came just to sort of look at the car. You know, everybody was sort of gathered around staring at this thing. And the guy, like I said, he was nice, and he said, look, I'm just going to let you off with a warning here, but just be careful because, you know, this tiny little car, if you get rear-ended in this thing, you're going to be dead. You know, and of course, that's not true, but I sort of smiled and said, yeah, thank you, I realize that. And it wasn't until after I pulled away that I realized, oh, wait a minute, if I'm speeding, how in the world am I going to get rear-ended, you know? Kind of not the right phrase to tell me if you're trying to tell me not to speed. You just encourage me to speed. And fortunately, I didn't think about that till I left, because I have this nature of needing to bring things up to people on the spot when it happens. Like, well, you know, that's not entirely right what you just said. I just have to point that out. And that generally leads to much longer, more unpleasant conversations, which nobody really needs or wants. And right now, actually, not to stay on the smart car subject too long, but I've got this other problem. I was able to find a place in New York City that actually can service smart cars, because they sell them and now they service them. And I was the first service that they ever actually did. And since my car was imported from Canada and is a diesel version of the smart car, which they don't sell here, it was a bit of a challenge for them to actually figure out how to do the service. But they did it. They did it, and it saved me a trip to Canada, and that was all fine and good. Except yesterday, the engine light came on for no reason at all. You know, that little check engine light? And you look in the book, and all it says is, check engine light comes on, drive to a dealer and have it checked. And that's just great, because I have no idea what that could possibly mean. And since the car comes from a different country and is of a different model, it's 3 years old and it's diesel, they're not entirely sure either how to diagnose these things. So I've got this little amber light that could mean horrible things or it could mean nothing, and they're not entirely sure that they can figure it out. It's like having some mystery illness that all the doctors in the world can't figure out. And now I have to figure out what to do about that. So hopefully they'll figure out how to get that that light to go off. And also, okay, one more story, then we're done with smart cars. This happened a few weeks ago. I don't think I told this story. Did I tell this story? Basically, I was driving a friend home from New York City. I was going up to Westchester. And this was, it was actually maybe a couple of months ago. There were potholes everywhere in New York City. I swear, we have the worst roads. We have the worst roads maybe in the world. If you don't count dirt roads, all right, let's eliminate dirt roads. Let's eliminate gravel roads. We're talking about asphalt. We're talking about tarmac. We're talking about actual pavement. All right, in that category, for whatever reason, New York City has the worst roads in the world. They really do. I don't know why this is. Why they can't simply keep the pavement smooth. Why they can't repair the roads. Why they can't finish construction jobs ever. Other cities do this. Other cities have no problem. I've been to cities that are way far north of us that have more of a salt and sand issue and snow and sleet and all that, and yet their roads are pristine. I've been to San Francisco where they have earthquakes and the whole earth splits open, and yet the roads, you could perform an operation while you're driving. Well, not while you're driving, while someone else is driving. But New York is unpredictable, crazy. And the thing is, in a smart car, when you hit a pothole, you really hit a pothole. It hurts. You feel it. It's the front of the car is right where your feet are, and it's just an unpleasant thing. So I was trying to avoid these potholes while I was driving up the FDR Drive, which is a major highway. And I was mostly avoiding them. I had to sort of drive zigzaggedy. But I hit one. I hit one hard. And then as I was going over the Willis Avenue Bridge, I hit another one that was right in the in one of the little structural connector things that you couldn't even see. But I hit it so hard, it just felt like I had hit a wall. That's how hitting a pothole in a smart car feels. Couldn't have avoided it because I didn't see it, and you have to drive someplace. But I just felt that was bad. And then a few minutes later, as I'm starting to get on to the thruway, I guess it's a thruway there, Route 87, I hear what sounds like a helicopter above me, and I realize it's not a helicopter above me, it's my tire below me. And yes, there I was, 2 o'clock in the morning in the South Bronx with a flat tire and a smart car. Oh, it doesn't get much more precious than that. And so, basically, we had to pull over, get off the road, and just sort of pull into the first gas station that we were able to find. That's when I got on the phone. I tried to call the emergency hotline for smart cars, which they have in the guide. And they put me on hold for about 20 minutes, never even spoke to a human. I realized they probably weren't even there, and I just would have been on hold until 9 in the morning or something. I called AAA, tried to explain to them what had happened. They said they'd try and send somebody out. And after sitting there for about a half hour, I got the idea of maybe asking one of the cab drivers that was coming to fill up their cars with gas at the gas station if there might be a 24-hour tire shop somewhere. You know, this is New York City. Okay, yeah, we got the potholes, but we also have things known as 24-hour tire shops, which are the coolest things in the world. They really are amazing. So, as luck would have it, two blocks away, there was a 24-hour tire shop. So we were able to have the car limp over there to this place, where all of a sudden, as soon as we arrived there at this completely Spanish-speaking shop that was open all night long, we were surrounded by people that had never seen a car like this before. They just sort of adopted it as their own and put everything aside to try and get this car back on its feet. Now, keep in mind, the tire size is like nothing you've ever seen. It's so tiny compared to most cars. I was amazed they were actually able to find anything that could fit the rim. And speaking of the rim, it looked like it was completely destroyed, bent out of shape. But they spent all this time hammering it together, making it repairable so that the tire would fit on it. So after about another 20 minutes, I was good to go. And the whole thing cost me $30. I mean, that's a New York story for you right there. Honest people, people who care, in the middle of the night in the South Bronx. Just that car brings out the best in people. And I think a lot of things bring out the best in people. And it's kind of surprising when you're in a situation, you think is going to be really miserable and unpleasant, and it turns out to be not so bad. So yeah, New York moment, smart car moment, and all sorts of fun like that. All right. You know, I had an interesting experience this week, actually. I ran into somebody who grew up in the same neighborhood as me. I might have talked about this before. I grew up around here. I grew up actually a mile or two away from this place. One of the reasons why I went to this school, because it was convenient, because it was cheap. You know, tuition was $650 a semester when I went here. And that wasn't, you know, it was a while ago, okay, but it wasn't that long ago. Late 70s, early 80s, okay? Not a huge amount. We're not talking the 1940s here. We're talking, you know, within the realm of memory. And college tuition these days, it's just, even in a state university, it's nowhere near that. Nowhere near that at all. So yeah, that's one of the reasons why I came here. Of course, this radio station coming on the air, that certainly helped. Gave me something to do with my time. But growing up in a typical suburban development, I imagine that's what a lot of people listening today are doing, growing up in a typical suburban development. I just wonder, after talking to this guy for many hours, because this is somebody that grew up about the same time as me, we knew a lot of the same people, and experienced a lot of the same things, I just wonder how different it's gotten today. How different growing up in a typical suburban neighborhood is today than it was back in the 70s. And I came to the realization after this long conversation that it's just unrecognizable. It's simply unrecognizable because back then, keep in mind, I lived in a development that had hundreds of houses. It still does. It was actually I can tell you it was known as the S section. Now, what does that mean? The S section basically is a section here in the Stony Brook area where all the streets begin with S. They begin with the letter S. Very clever. Now, it's not the only section. There's a B section, there's a P section, there's a T section, an H section. We don't like to talk about the H section. But the point is, there are all these sections, and they come up with all the crazy names that begin with the particular letter. And there's other kinds of suburbia, too. I think there's one section around here where all the street names are car names, like Impala Drive and Chevy Way or things like that. And I'd like to know from our listeners if there are any other bizarre, that's not so bizarre, is it? But there must be, if I was in charge of naming streets, I would come up with all sorts of concepts, like, you know, Grateful Dead analogies or, you know, album titles, things like that as street names. Why not? Why does everything have to be Main Street and Maple? Let's be imaginative. Let's be creative. Let's have some fun. And maybe people are doing that. So please write to us, otw@2600.com, if you live in an unusual development, or maybe have ideas for interesting ways of naming streets. So we had this crazy development known as the S section. Ours was particularly unique, though, of all the sections around, because while most of them just have streets and intersections and dead ends and things like that, we had something known as Sycamore Circle. It still exists. And basically what Sycamore Circle is a road that just circles the entire development. Yeah, I used to ride my bike around Sycamore Circle. It's at least a few miles. And it just surrounds the entire place. There's two entrances, actually three if you take that dirt road up the hill. And that kind of made all sorts of different sections. There was the inner section within the circle. There was the outer section outside of the circle. And it just gave this sense that you couldn't escape. You were always there. In fact, I found somebody once when I was riding my bike, this guy who looked, he was in a car, and he just looked desperate. He asked me, which way is out? I just want to leave. And I even read a story once about people who were robbing a house, and they got lost, and they couldn't get out. And they got caught because they were lost in the development. That's what it's like. Yeah, so now, growing up in a place like that, how is it different than today? Well, I've spoke to a lot of people that live in present day suburbia, and I've often asked, how are things? Do you do the same things that we used to do? We used to paint part of the street into kind of a handball court, and we play games. Can you even do that today? Can you paint parts of the street, or are you? Is that a violation of the Patriot Act because you're painting lines in the street that a car might try to follow and cause a fiery explosion or something? See, I don't know. There's all different rules now that didn't exist then that weren't a big deal. You could walk around and talk to strangers, and people didn't think twice about it. But now we're all paranoid and crazy and worrying about everything. But what people tell me, and this really blows me away, they say that there are more things to do today. More things to do today, so people just don't hang out as much in the streets. Now, on my block, I knew everybody. I knew every single person on that block. And in fact, I knew most people, I think, in the development. Keep in mind, hundreds of houses in the development. I knew which houses had kids, which houses didn't, which houses were weird people, which houses were interesting people. And today, I don't even know who my neighbors are. And apparently that's not uncommon. That's not that uncommon. Back then, there was a lot more associating. There was a lot more interaction. People would hang out with other people. And I imagine that still goes on to a degree. But keep in mind, when someone says there's more to do today, what they mean is, well, there's 1,000 channels on television. There's the internet. There are all sorts of places to go in the neighborhood that didn't exist 20, 30 years ago. Now, this area, I've seen this area change so much over the decades. It used to be that maybe there was a shopping center in one area, and then there were trees between the development and the shopping center. Well, the shopping center doubled in size, and then it tripled in size, and then a shopping center came across the street from it, and then another shopping center a block closer to the development. Before you know it, there are traffic lights every place, there are new stores, there are duplicates of the new stores, there's competitors to the new stores, and of course then there have to be new houses to fill all these new stores. And what I do sometimes, I drive around this area and I just try to remember when this particular place became a blight on the landscape and what it was before then. And it simply blows you away because you realize how much has been added to the landscape, how much has been taken away from the landscape, and how, just like every place else in this country, this particular area is beginning to look, and in fact has well more than begun to look. You have fast food joints all over the place. You've got franchises of all sorts. It's fun to just go and trace the history of a particular outlet. You know, to look at a place that now is a fast food joint and say, well, this used to be some other fast food joint. Before that, they sold sneakers. And before that, they were a hero place. And before that, it was nothing. And by nothing, I mean wilderness, which is the way I wish it was now. We have malls, we have all sorts of supermarkets and department stores and all kinds of wholesale clubs. Those things did not exist. And now they're everywhere. There's not only one, there are like five places where you go where you buy huge amounts of products, huge amounts. Things that would not even be in someone's fantasy decades ago. Why would you need so much of something? Why would you need huge tubs of mayonnaise and enough meat to store for a year? Why do you need that? Are we under occupation or something? And the size of the cars today is just—it's simply gone out of the gone beyond the stratosphere. But yeah, back then, and you know, I don't want to sound like somebody who is remembering, you know, way back in the old days, sitting on a rocking chair on the porch, watching the horse-drawn carriages go by. It wasn't like that. We had electricity. We had telephones. We had all sorts of things. But it was just so incredibly different and strange compared to today. I mean, look, let's look at telephones. Let's look at just telephones. Inside my house, I had a single black rotary telephone with a bell. I'm sure you've all seen it, if you have not actually had one yourself. Now, this is how it was working back then. You had one phone, you leased the phone. You did not buy a phone, you could not buy a phone. The phone company, and there was just one phone company then, the Bell operating system. They would not allow you, the government would not allow you to have your own phone. You had to lease it from them. There were no modular connectors. It was hardwired into your wall. And touch-tone phones were a rarity, so you had to use those rotary dial phones. When the phone rang, it was a big deal because it was a loud bell, and it meant somebody was calling you. There was no caller ID. You had no way of knowing who that person was. All you had to do was get to that phone and answer it, because it was summoning you, and it was important. Phone calls meant something. Today, everybody's got a phone on every single device that they could possibly imagine. People walking down the street, they have their phones with them. People in their homes, they have a million different kinds of phones there. And being somebody who's into phones, you'd think this would be paradise for me, but actually it's turned into some kind of bizarre, like, Disney World hell. And I kind of miss the old days. I'm not saying the old days were better in that regard, but I'll tell you, phone calls did sound better. Landlines sound a lot better than cell phones. And it was kind of cool that we weren't always hopping onto the phone every single opportunity to send text messages or to tell somebody the latest thought that popped into our heads. We were spending more time hanging out with people doing physical activity outside in the street, playing handball or whatever game we decided was in that particular day. Not spending all our time surfing on the internet. And knowing everybody around us. Now, again, I don't really want to know everybody around me. Maybe I've just become antisocial as I get older, but I'm not really interested in learning all about the people that that surround me, either in a building or in a neighborhood. Just kind of like to be left to my own. But it's good to know that there are people out there if you do want to meet them, if you do want to talk to them, if you do want to hang out with them. And it's good for kids too, I suppose. Now, I mentioned 1,000 channels of television. You know, back when I was growing up in this neighborhood, we had over-the-air TV. That's all we had. In fact, my house only had a black-and-white TV. Can you even get black-and-white TVs anymore? The first television set I remember having didn't even have UHF. Basically, what that means is it had channels 2 through 13, and then if you wanted to have the channels above that, channels 14 through 83, which there are few and far between to start with, you had to get some kind of special converter in order to be able to watch those. But back when I was exploring the television dial, basically you could just get channels 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13. And 13 was the one nobody watched because that was educational. Now, I lived in the city for the first few years of my life. So when we moved out to the island, this amazing thing happened. I could get Connecticut television stations. I could get Channel 3 and Channel 8. And that was amazing to me as a kid because that was a whole world opening up. And then when I got my first UHF converter, I was able to get these other channels from different places. Channel 20, Channel 21, Channel 49, all these weird worlds that nobody else knew about. It didn't take much to amuse a kid back then. So I was able to watch all these distance signals, and sometimes they really were distance signals. Sometimes, especially in the summer, the atmosphere would do weird things, and you'd start picking up stations from as far away as Philadelphia and Boston. In fact, it even went a lot further than that. For those of you who still or have ever used over-the-air technology, not cable, not satellite, but actually watch the television station as it comes over the air, sometimes in the summertime, you get this crazy interference on, I think, channels 2 through 6. And it's more pronounced on the lower channels, channels 2, 3, 4. And you would get signals. First of all, it would just be a mess. You couldn't make out anything. But you would get signals from as far away as I got one from Kansas once. Kansas! On my television set. Nobody appreciated this. Nobody cared that I was there, actually able to see a signal from a TV station that began with the letter K. But to me, back then, nothing was more thrilling than that. Yeah, I was a strange kid. But cable TV, that started to come into my neighborhood, and I remember somehow I was able to pick up a ghost of a signal from cable TV. What that meant was channel 6 was an empty channel. I was able to actually see, even though we didn't have cable, I was able to see the signal from Channel 6. It must have been bleeding off of a telephone pole or something. And you know what Channel 6 was? Channel 6 was the only channel that cable TV offered back then in addition to the broadcast channels. In other words, they give you a good signal on channels 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13. That's it. That's all they gave you. And then you could get Channel 6 as a bonus. And Channel 6, I'd like to know if anybody out there actually remembers this. Channel 6 was a series of clocks, a series of dials. Basically, it would be the time of day, and then the camera would move over a little bit. Then it would be the temperature. Then it would be the barometer. Then it would be the humidity. And then the camera would stop, and it would start going back to the left again. And it would do this all the time. This was what you got for getting cable television. And people loved it. This was the newest thing. This was new technology. I would just like to one day have everything revert back to the way it was just for one day to see how people react, to see how they deal with these things that we thought were so cool back then. It's just incredible to see how it all changes. Now, again, you know, I grew up in a typical neighborhood, typical suburban neighborhood. I'd like to know if other people have similar stories, witnessed the same changes that I witnessed. I think it's so interesting and educational to take pictures, to document the changes. I don't know if anyone's done that in this area. I hope somebody has, where you can just see what it used to look like. And you can show people that assume that things have always been the way they are. And that's sort of what I find to be the theme, is people who think things have always been the way they are. You know, the way our schools are now, where you have to basically be strip searched to enter the damn building, where you're not allowed to leave, where you have words like lockdown, where you have cops inside the corridors. It wasn't like that. This is not the way it used to be. Now, the way my school was, I went to Ward Melville High School, which is still here. It's not going to go anywhere. We had two junior high schools, grades 7, 8, and 9, and one high school, grades 10, 11, 12. And basically, everybody from the two junior high schools went to the same high school. And the weird thing about it was the buildings all looked the same. The junior high schools were mini versions of the high school. So I went to Robert Cushman Murphy Junior High School, which is right down the road here. And the weird thing is that Robert Cushman Murphy, the real Robert Cushman Murphy, died while I was in ninth grade. And then I went to Ward Melville High School. And what's particularly weird is that Ward Melville died while I was in 12th grade of that school. So I was kind of, I guess, an unlucky student. I came to Stony Brook, but apparently the town survived while I was here. So my school, I'm talking about high school at this point. We had what was known as an open campus. I don't think these things exist anymore. Basically, if you didn't have class, you could leave. You could get in your car if you had a car. I didn't, but I had friends who did. And plus, there was a bagel shop just down the block. In fact, there still is, but I'm sure nobody's allowed to go there anymore. And you could just walk there or go someplace else. And as long as you came back for your next class, hey, that's cool. That's fine. And this was the more restrictive period of the high school's history, because back before I went there was the really laid back, nobody cares period, which was known as the Cotton Era. Apparently the principal's last name was Cotton. And back then, I think it was, it must have been the early 70s or something, people were just all strung out on all kinds of drugs and God knows what else. I went there once on a field trip. Yeah, they take you to the high school as a field trip from your other school sometimes, I guess maybe just to show you what the future looks like. And there were literally people lying in the hallways, just kind of sleeping or, you know, on something, who knows. And basically it was this bizarre, bizarre scene, which apparently was not all that uncommon then. Imagine that today. Imagine that today, what would happen? We had, in our high school, a smoking shed. That's right, a smoking shed for smokers. People had to smoke cigarettes, and this is what I found out by talking to this guy I ran into. Apparently, they smoked a lot more than cigarettes in this place. Not just the students either, but the teachers as well. Yeah, they went to the smoking shed in high school with teachers to smoke pot. And nobody thought anything of it. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily a good thing. I'm just saying that, wow, things have changed. Now you can't even get into the building unless you show ID, unless you prove that you don't have any weapons, and don't even try to leave before you're supposed to leave. And people think that's the way it always has been, and this is the way it's supposed to be. Yeah, look at the differences. Look at the differences back in the early 70s, in that completely wide-open, crazy period where people were lying in the hallways and smoking all sorts of drugs and things like that. Back then, people thought that was normal. How would we react to that today? We'd react to that with shock. How would people then react to what we have today? where we live in a virtual armed camp, where there are policemen with guns in our high schools. Who would react the strongest? And how did it get this way? Definitely going down a road. Definitely going down a road that I'm not sure about. Because we keep building. We keep building new things. We keep duplicating what we have. We keep taking away the space that we need to remain sane. It's less and less of that every single year. And as a result, there's less places to just sort of escape to and get away from it all. People can't get away from it all. They're surrounded. They're surrounded all the time, not just by their neighbors and the fast food joints and the malls, but just by the constant connectivity to everything. You can't just get away and not be reachable. Back then, if you weren't in your house, people couldn't reach you. They didn't know where you were. How would they call you? How could they possibly call you? There were no cell phones. There was only that one black rotary dial telephone in your house. That was it. Pagers? Nobody had pagers. There was no internet. Yeah, there were computers, but people didn't deal with those. So, yeah, the mindset was just so incredibly different. In that regard, it was completely different. There was still, I think there are certain themes that that pervade, that exist no matter what. And stupidity is definitely one of them. Oh, yeah, there was so much stupidity back then as well. So much intolerance. So much racism and sexism, homophobia. It all existed back then. It all exists today. Just the flavor has changed a little bit. But yeah, in my neighborhood, hundreds of houses. I'm thinking now, I'm trying to remember. I'm going through all this in my head as I speak, so bear with me if there are long pauses. I'm trying to remember certain things. But I honestly cannot think. No, I did actually just think. There was one black family in the entire neighborhood. One. How incredible is that? One. Out of hundreds. And this was not the Deep South. This was not the period of the Civil Rights Movement. This was supposedly an enlightened era. But no, one family. One family. And as I recall, they were so light-skinned that you could even say they weren't black if you wanted to use the actual definition of colors. But that was enough to make some people nervous. They really were nervous. One black family out of, what, 500 houses? And, this is how it begins. This is what's going to happen. The end is near. Wow. Yeah, it's hard to believe, isn't it? I know in school there was always the black kid. This must be so alien to people who go to school now, but back here in suburbia, there was basically maybe one, two, maybe three per year when I was growing up in each grade. And it's just very strange to see people's reactions and how they were just full of fear and apprehension because somebody was a little bit different. That has not changed. That is exactly the same as things are today, because people still are afraid of people who are different in any way, who rock the boat, who are individuals. And it's sad to see that, unfortunately. So I don't know. It's cool to go back and look at the old neighborhoods. I do this occasionally. I drive through the old neighborhoods, and I look at the streets. You know, some of the people still live in the same houses. Must be, what, 30 years ago? More than that. And people still live in the same place. What's that like? What is that like? Do you still live in the same world that you lived in back then, or have you changed with the times? Or it just seems weird and strange that you stay in the same place for so long. It also seems depressing when people leave and you look at the old houses and remember the good times that you had there, and now it's a completely different history where there's no memory of what happened. And I guess any neighborhood is like that. When you look back. Well, I'd sure like to hear different stories. otw@2600.com is our address. Growing up in suburbia, wow. Really hits home. And we're surrounded by suburbia here. In fact, I want to recommend a couple of films that come to mind that sort of bring forth the whole suburban as it is today mentality. One film called Suburbia. Now, there's two films called Suburbia. One is good, one isn't. This is the one that involves a bunch of kids standing outside a 7-Eleven type of store all night long, just sort of hanging out and getting into trouble. That's the one. It's not on DVD, I don't think. So you have to search for it on one of the cable channels or whatever. But that sort of sums up what suburbia is today. Another one, which I'm just watching now, is Fast Food Nation. And that sums up just the utter garbage and craziness that's going on with chains and homogenization of everything. Yeah, it's weird, depressing, educational, enlightening, frightening, and all sorts of other things all rolled up into one. But I like to think if we all are kind of experiencing the same thing together, we might be able to crawl out of it together if we share these experiences and maybe build something better. It's cool to have links to the past, to realize that there are people who remember these things, that there are people who have ties to communities and things like that. Makes it count, makes it matter. And I just wonder if that's something that we'll be able to say 30 years from now, that people have ties to communities, that there actually are communities. When everything is just revolving around malls and franchises and fast food joints, how much of a community is there actually? You know, we can all remember hanging out in the street until late at night and going to various places that actually meant something. And I wonder if we still have that today. And of course, we've changed as a society. I say we were racist and sexist and all sorts of things back then, like we are today. And I guess we're also a violent society like we were back then as well. We think we're more violent now, but, you know, we were pretty violent back then as well. It's just that we didn't seem to have the means to carry out our violence quite as easily as we did back then, as we do today, rather. Because I'm not sure. I'm not sure what has changed. I think we've just become a lot more defensive and a lot more able to get our hands on things. And as a result of that, a lot more violence actually plays out in reality, when back in the old days, it would have been a bit more difficult. Couldn't order guns over the internet and easily carry out massacres with rapid-fire machine guns. Couldn't do that. But the mentality was there. Yeah, the violent mentality has always been there. The intolerance has always been there. The stupidity has always been there. And, you know, this whole experiment with the human race has been going on for many thousands of years now. I think that's pretty much stayed level. It's always been there, always will be. We just have to figure out ways to get through it somehow and to find those people who see this, find those people who do matter, who do care, who do make a difference, who are intelligent. That's something I can never give up on, is finding those enlightened few out of the huge populace of clueless ones that make these things propagate and get more and more depressing. Yeah. Wow, that's a way to end things, isn't it? But when you look back at how it's all changed over the years, over the decades, it opens up your eyes. It opens up your eyes. You have to wonder where it is that you're going. You have to wonder what's going to happen in the next couple of decades and how we're going to fix what we've done to the environment, what we've done to our standard of living, what we've done to our expectations, what we've done to our paranoia and fear and intolerance and all that nonsense. Oh, well. Again, share your thoughts, share your opinions, because I'd sure like to hear them as we crawl through suburbia together, see what the next level of humanity is. OTW at 2600.com.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real.
Hey, it's Finn with you. It's Finn's Revolution, Tuesday evening, 7 to 9 p.m. I have to disagree with Emmanuel on something. I think big tubs of mayonnaise have some kind of benefit. I can't go into it, but here's the show.